Welcome to the Death Care Marketing Show.
Most funeral homes think their job ends when the service is over, right? I think that's when one of your greatest opportunities begins, because when the flowers fade, the casseroles stop coming, and everyone returns to their normal lives, that's when grief just gets started. Today, we're talking about America's bereavement care deserts and why supporting families after the funeral may be one of the most meaningful things your funeral home can do, and why it pays you back on multiple levels. And we'll show you why smart funeral home owners know that even though the funeral is ended, your opportunity to care doesn't. My guest today is Sandra Neparud, founder of the Grief app and a passionate advocate for expanding grief support across America. Sandra believes one of the greatest unmet needs isn't funeral planning. It's what happens after the funeral. Today, we'll explore how funeral homes can help bridge that gap, strengthen relationships, and become an even greater resource of hope to their communities. It's going to be a good one. Stay tuned. Our guest today is Sandra Neparud, founder of the Grief app, who's dedicated her work to helping families navigate grief long after the funeral is over. Sandra believes that one of the biggest unmet needs in America isn't funeral planning, it's grief support. And today, we're talking about how funeral homes can be part of the solution. So without further ado, let's bring in Sandra. Hi, Sandra.
Hi, Mary. Thank you for having me.
You are so welcome. Thank you for taking the time out to share this topic with us. I think it is so important. We talked a lot before the show started, and I just want to make sure that we save all the good stuff for the show. But I like to start every show and finding out your story, because I think everyone in death care has a very unique story. So tell us yours. What led you into grief care?
So 2.5 years ago, I was living in Spokane, Washington, which is the second biggest city in Washington. And my husband passed away kind of suddenly. And there was no bereavement support for me whatsoever. I was left on my own to figure out my life after it came crashing down around my ears. And this really surprised me, because I thought for sure that there would be resources available, but hospice didn't follow up with me. Maybe it was a miscommunication issue, but when my mother died, hospice also didn't follow up with me. I went to see a counselor that my insurance paid for, but it felt like she didn't know grief, and it felt like she was throwing spaghetti against the wall, just bringing in random things. And from that, I discovered that grief is not a required topic to become a counselor. So many of them have no grief knowledge at all. And it's mind-boggling, because loss and grief are such a part of life. How is this not a required topic? And then I looked for groups. The only groups available were religious, and I just wasn't comfortable with a religious grief group. So then I went online. And when you're a widow, half of the Facebook groups are quasi-dating sites where widows and widowers are trying to get together. And I was not ready for that. Some of the sites were kind of a race to the bottom to see who could be in the most grief. Like, it was almost like a competition.
Really?
So that didn't work for me. So finally, I found a local widowers group, but it was fairly inactive. So I actually had to become a moderator and host events myself to have any type of grief support.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow.
So then
you saw a need and obviously you filled it. We're going to talk about that today. But was the thing that you realized that you could make a better solution?
So a year after my husband's death, I had a friend that had gotten onto an app to help them stop drinking. And I was playing around with that app going, well, you know, there's some similarities here. And if you take this and you tweak it, it could potentially work for grief. And so then that's when I started going down the road of looking into what are apps good and not good at, and whether or not grief could be helped by an app. And that's how I ended up founding it.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Well, we're going to get into exactly what the Grief app does. But it is such a special thing. And I think funeral homeowners need to know what this is. I mean, it's basically aftercare for you as a funeral home director, but it is such a blessing to families that you serve. I was going to share the story with you before, but I thought we'd talk about it now. When my mom died, because I was really like in the fetal position. I mean, I was raising small children. My mom died really young. I mean, according to me, my grandmother, her mother, died when she in my arm at almost 98. So I just expected my mom to live that long. And so when she got cancer and was given 3 months to live, she died at 79. I was like, what the heck? Like, that's not fair. I mean, I even told her, like, dude, you owe me another at least 25 years. Like, what is going on, you know? And I won't go into that whole story, but my mom was so funny. Okay, I'll get better. I'm like, all right. Actually, this kind of ties in. So I literally, I did go to a grief because people were like, Mary, you have to get help. Because I literally was like crying every day. It was terrible. And I went to a session and I guess this grief counselor, it must have been his first rodeo. We were sitting around with, you know, tissue boxes in our laps and everybody was like sharing their story. And I shared a story that when I was taking care of my mom, she had a colostomy bag. And so I would always, because I was the, you know, certified nurse assistant in high school. So I was like the one to do it, right? So I would make her look away because I didn't want her to see my face because it was not most lovely smell. Mm-hmm. And I wear my feelings on my face. So I'd be like, Mom, why don't you look away so you don't see me do this, right? So as I'm doing this one time, she was turned towards me and she was kind of looking at my tummy. And I've always struggled with weight my whole life. And that was always a point of contention with my mom and me, by the way. So in my stage of anger when my mom died, what I tried to remember was all those things she said to me about my weight and made me angry at her so I could get over her, like, toilet baby. Anyways, so she happened to be looking towards me and I said, jokingly, Mom, stop looking at my fat, even though I had just lost a bunch of weight. I just said, stop looking at my fat, jokingly. And she's like, oh, Mary, she says, I was just thinking about that. Like, you've worked so hard to lose all that weight and now it looks like you're gaining some back. So what's going on? Is there something happening at home? Like, is everything okay? Literally, as I'm changing her colostomy bag. And I said, well, Mom, you know, someone I love is not well. And so I'm basically on the Jesus diet, all bread and wine. And she's like, I said, yeah, I go home and I drink about a bottle of wine, eat a loaf of bread. And, you know, I feel much better. And then, you know, and she's like, oh, Mary, who is it? I'll be praying for them. And I was like,
Mom,
I said, wow, Mom, I said, it's you, you know, and she's like, oh my gosh, I am so sorry. I said, well, you know, we have a solution. So if you can get better, I'll lose the weight. And she's like, ill. And we literally shook hands on it. It was the weirdest thing. She was literally dying. Like, I'm like, so we always have this joking relationship. So she's like, deal. So in the grief group, and I'm sorry, I'm probably taking too long to tell the story, but we were going around the circle and everybody was sharing their story. So I shared that story and the grief counselor said, well, you showed her. And I said, excuse me? And he goes, she died, so you didn't lose the weight.
Wow. Wow.
Wow. I was like, I remember sitting there, everybody in the group, they all like shot their head and they're like, I mean, we were all doing the same look like this. I said, oh my gosh, did you just say I'm fat? And he was like, oh, no, it's just that your mom said if you lost the weight, she wouldn't die, but she did die. So obviously you didn't lose the weight. And like, he was trying to backpedal. And I said, dude, I said, you need to keep your day job because you're not good at this. And I handed them the box and I said, you have a lovely day. And I went out and I was like, wow, I just lost it. That was my only experience with a grief counselor. So I never went back. So thank you for doing what we're talking about today. Cause like, that is like, I'm assuming probably a common story that there isn't support. But seriously, can you believe he said that to me?
No. And I can tell you, we've put together a how to lead a grief group paper, and that is not okay. Like that is not what he should have been doing. So yeah, I'm sorry about that.
Right. Yeah. No, it's all good. I've now used that story as a joke kind of because like I've gotten through it. But it's just one of those things. Like, what's the worst thing someone's ever told you? Hello, you're died, and your mom, you stayed fat. Whatever. So So let's get into a term that you actually brought up to my attention, which again is part of the title of the show, is the bereavement care desert. So I don't know if other funeral directors, have you ever heard those words? I know you mentioned it's in a new report, but what does this mean? Like, what is a bereavement care desert? How widespread is it? And what is it? Tell me more about
it. So a bereavement care desert is essentially a location where there is no readily accessible bereavement care. And so that was, that was my situation. There was nothing that I could go to that worked for me. And it's not just an urban thing. It's not a rural thing. The grief counselor, one of the grief counselors on my team works an hour north of Spokane, and she is the only grief counselor in three counties. And so if you want to see an actual grief counselor or go to a grief support group, hers are the only grief support groups available. So you're driving 45 minutes each direction to see her.
Wow.
And so it's, it's common. It's urban, it's rural. And one of the things, one of the reasons why it's there is who is responsible for grief. You know, as I mentioned, grief is not a required topic to become a counselor. And so it's not as if every counselor has that experience. Hospice theoretically takes the lead on that. And in some places they really do a great job, but it can be hit and miss. As I said, when my mom died, I was her primary caretaker and hospice did not follow up with me. When my husband died, hospice did not follow up on me. And not everyone dies in hospice. If you're in an accident, if you die really quickly in the hospital, like hospice doesn't even get involved. And there is really no one else particularly stepping into that void. And so people die every day. And for every person that dies, five people go into grief from it. And there is, there are very few services available. But this is what I'm saying. Funeral homes are in that perfect position to take advantage of it because they know who the relatives are of the person that died. They are in contact with them. This is a great chance for them to reach out, fill that gap, and by filling that gap, build their brand as the company that you remember when the next person passes away.
Yeah, that's awesome. Because you're right. Like if you're in a desert, meaning you're a physical location, but by having something that's portable, that's always with you, hello, don't go anywhere without these things. I think that is such a cool, that you fill that gap, which is awesome. So here's something that really struck me as we were, I was preparing for the show, is that the average funeral lasts a day, but grief lasts for years. And that is a huge gap. So what happens typically after a family, after a funeral for a family? Like, is there, you just said there's not a lot of people who are picking up the mantle. What does a typical funeral home situation look like for their aftercare?
Well, I can tell you from my experience with my husband that the aftercare is an email every month saying, hey, have you pre-planned your own funeral yet? And as far as my mother's death, I had a boyfriend who passed away. I didn't even hear from the funeral homes because I wasn't the one who paid for it. And so unfortunately, very few of them are doing much more than trying to pre-sell the next funeral. And maybe a note at the 1 year anniversary. It's not real robust what's available right now. Some of them in general.
Yeah. But you mentioned that, I mean, we're talking about funeral homes, of course, because funeral is a death care marketing show, but you mentioned something earlier briefly, which I just hit me. I realized like there's so much other grief than just death. There's grief of losing a relationship, a friendship, a job, a pet. I mean, there's so many things that we deal with grief. So is there different ways to deal with death? I'm sorry, deal with grief based on what kind of grief it is?
No. So grief is caused by loss. It's caused by a significant loss. And what is a significant loss to you depends on your life. So loss is loss. Grief is grief. And you deal with it all the same way. It's just in America, we have associated grief with death. And grief, death is one type of a loss, but it's not the only loss. And so we do in the app itself, we really do try to talk about loss rather than death. Yeah, because if you lose your mobility, like if you have a serious health condition where suddenly you aren't driving anymore, you've lost your dignity because you've got people coming in and cleaning your colostomy bag, right? You can lose your career.
Lost your independence,
Yeah. So there are all sorts of different types of grief. And we just in America, we are not doing a good job of addressing these. And so it's a lingering issue and it can lead to all sorts of addictions because pretty soon you try to numb your emotions. And so there's drinking, there's drugs, there's too much TV, there's too much sugar. Like, we're not dealing with it. And so we're numbing it instead. And some of the, one of the really shocking statistics to me when I got into this was to learn that the number one time that people seek grief therapy is 5 years after their loss. And the number two time is 1 year after their loss. And so we have this thing where we think that time will heal all wounds, but with grief, it doesn't. It does linger until you really get in there and try to work on it.
Yeah. And it's cyclical. So it always comes back around. Like, you think, oh, I'm done. You know, we were doing a grief workshop for one of my local clients, and this gentleman came, and he was, he says, I'm a Navy man and I'm a doctor. And I'm very like, I need a checklist and a thing. And he says, it's been 2 years and my wife, like, I should be over her by now. So I came to the workshop to learn what steps I need to take to check it off my list and be done with this, because I am stopped sad. I don't want to be sad anymore. Like, this is ridiculous. Like, he was angry about it. And the sweet grief counselor was like, I'm so sorry. It's cyclical. It's not linear. Like, you can't go down a path, because little things are going to remind you, little triggers. My mom, I still smell my mom's perfume, and it's a very old fashioned perfume, but it's like, when I smell, it's like, oh, I look around, like, I think she's there. It's like weird, you know, and a song will come on, or I'll drive somewhere and a memory of something she said, or, you know, I'll see the hummingbird that always reminds me of her in my backyard. Like, it's always, and it's not always like sobby. Like, I don't break, my mom hasn't gone 21 years now. I don't break down as much, but it still is a catch in my throat, you know? And so seriously, Sandra, like, what you're doing is amazing. So because this is the Death Care Marketing Show, we always try to tie everything back to marketing. So how grief care becomes marketing. So I know some owners are listening and thinking, well, I'm already overwhelmed. So let's just connect the dots. How does grief support become marketing? Like, why does aftercare create trust? And why do referrals begin after the funeral? Can we kind of talk about that?
Yes, definitely. So, you know, there's this huge need, as we've just addressed, and nobody's meeting it. Had my funeral home reached out to me and provided any type of support, I would have grabbed at it. I would have grabbed at it, and frankly, I would have shared it on my widow and widowers group, because we are all seeking resources to help. And anyone that comes up with anything shares it. And so you build that relationship, because you weren't just, because, you know, when I get these emails from them, okay, I paid them for a service, they rendered the service, it was fine. That is where my relationship with them ended. And if someone else were to die, I would get back into the marketplace and see who offers the best packages. You know, I wouldn't necessarily go to them. But had they provided me that support, any type of support, not necessarily the grief app, there are some funeral homes out there who are leading grief groups. Because if it's a grief support group, you don't have to be a licensed therapist to do it. You know, we have some really basic rules that you can follow. Monthly grief groups, they do it at the library or the senior center. Their name gets into the calendar of events. They can bring in other people who weren't necessarily connected to the people that they've already buried. And so suddenly they're reaching a population who are in need, they are in grief, who they might not have even been able to contact before if they were just going off of who's already come to them. So you build that trust, because you were there when I needed you. You were there afterwards and you continue to provide the assistance. Or some funeral homes are doing wind phones. The wind phone came, I believe it came from Japan. It was this disconnected phone booth. And people were going to the phone booth, picking up the phone, knowing nobody was on the other end, and talking to their lost loved one, because that relationship is still there, even though they're gone. I still talk to my husband. I'm sure you still have conversations with your mom. And it became this location that you could go to kind of ceremonially. And so some funeral, some cemeteries are installing these wind phones that let people kind of process their grief that way. And they make it very, you know, social media pretty. So the people are snapping pictures of it.
It's funny you say that, because I literally just saw one that was at the beach, and it became like, it was always like an open old fashioned phone booth. And you can do it. And it was very Instagram, like you said. It had like a, looked like a frame, and they had a thing where you could put a, there was like a tube and you could put a rock through. So it created like little rock waterfall down the hill, and then it was the ocean, and you had an old fashioned phone. And I was just thinking that I'm like, maybe I should have my funeral homes install something like that in a pretty location mm-hmm. where people could come and make a phone call, you know, because we're going to be doing like a butterfly release and all that kind of stuff. And we do like painting classes and to help bring them into the community. But it's funny, you mentioned about groups. I made that suggestion just like, hey, like in a funeral, I am part of a couple funeral home groups on Facebook. And I was encouraging them like, hey, this has worked really well for our funeral home. And some of the funeral directors are like, no, a funeral home is for when people are sad and they only come for death and you shouldn't have people. And I'm like, well, actually, it's working really well in some communities to bring people together with not sadness and death, because if you're comfortable somewhere, you'll want to come back. If they gave you that human touch, I mean, even though we're all into automation, it's never to replace the compassion and the human touch. It's just to take care of mundane tasks so you have more time to be with your families. And I think that's so important. So for kind of reinforcing that, because I think that would be a really cool idea. So having something that creates that long-term, like I think we talked about a little bit in off screen, the string that holds your family to a tethers you to your family. So when they do have another need, which they will, there's no getting out of here alive, right?
Yeah.
Yep. We're all gonna go. And if you can keep a string like a balloon to your families, what a cool thing. And that's so somewhat similar. You mentioned that you made a really cool gift for yourself about your husband. And yes. Then you thought it'd be great for other people to share about that.
So part of the app itself is called the Memory Book. And the Memory Book, part of processing your loss is telling the stories, you know, telling the happy stories, the sad stories. You just need to get it out there, but you also want to preserve it so that you don't worry about forgetting the stories as you go. And so that was a really popular feature on the app. But because people put so much time and energy into that, we had requests that we come up with a permanent way for them to keep their memory book. And so we worked with a printing company, and that is my husband right there. Oh, that was actually the picture we used at his funeral.
I love it. He looks so fun. He looks like an adventurer.
We loved the outdoors. We met in Yellowstone National Park. So we were both big outdoors people.
Really? Like, were you both camping or were you walking on a trail? How'd you meet?
This is us dating. We both worked at one of the concessionaires. I cooked in the employee kitchen and he was the floor manager. We met in the employee dining room. So
that's so cool. It's like Dirty Dancing.
It kind of is. Yep. And so you put that, you know, the time, and this is his brother, that's my sister, that's, you know, Eric with both of them. You put so much time and energy into compiling this story that we did. We worked with a printing company. We got a really good deal, and people can download all of their pictures, 34 pictures to start with, but they can add more if there's more that they want, and then get it printed. Now they can either pay for it themselves or funeral home can buy it as a gift at Christmas, at the 1 year anniversary. It is a reason for the funeral home to reach out that is not selling a product. You are providing support. And no matter what, if the funeral home pays for it or if the people pay for it, the funeral home's logo goes on the back side. And so your logo is very prominent in something that they're not going to throw away. Nobody's going to take this book and toss it. And so then when the next person dies, you've got this memory book. Lots of times when people get these printed, they print it for their whole family. They print it for the children, the grandchildren, because we have a paperback version that's cheaper, and then we have a larger version that's a little bit more coffee table-ish. And so they'll print it for the whole families because everyone wants these pictures. And so that your kids, the grandkids, they all know who provided that for them. So we really feel like this is a strong marketing thing where you stay top of mind or you're easy to find when the next funeral happens. Because as I was saying, I don't know who buried my mom. My brother arranged it. I never heard from them. I don't know who buried my stepfather or a boyfriend that I had that died. I went to the funeral, but I don't know who did it. And so there is no string between me and those experiences. Whereas if I'd had this, then I would be able to look at it and know who, so that when my brother passes away, because he has no kids, I'll actually know what funeral homes he used that he liked. Because right now, I don't know.
Wow. So you're saying that if a funeral home subscribes to your service, they pay a monthly fee, and then they basically have a certain amount of families that they can share this with, or how's it go?
Unlimited. So we do it based on the size, how many funerals they did in the previous year, but it is unlimited. Okay. So they can offer it via email to every single person. They can offer it at the funerals. There's one company that actually goes to senior events, like senior health fairs, and they offer the subscription to the grief app at the senior health fair. Every time somebody opens the app, the splash screen, that loading screen, has the funeral home's logo on it. And so every time they open the app, they're going to see it. And then we also do something. There are hard days, you know, that come up, like the 1 year anniversary is a hard day. Your mother's birthday, I'm sure, is a hard day. And sometimes you're the only person that knows that it's a hard day, which kind of makes it a little bit harder. So one of the things we're developing right now is emails that get sent out. So they get sent out. The first one gets, the people identify when they get onto the app. They identify from 10 holidays, Mother's Day, Christmas, Easter, New Year's, you know, what holidays are going to be most difficult for them. And then they also
can people that self-identify that. So they're choosing, which is going to be, I love that. Because you can, as a funeral home, you could say, well, I think it's going to be this day. But you don't know that there might be a random day that you're, like you said, you're, maybe it's your dating anniversary. Who would know that date, right?
Right.
That is really smart, Sandra. Wow. Okay.
So then a month in advance, they get an email co-branded with the funeral home. So again, the funeral home is providing help. It is, that relationship is ongoing. And it talks about, here are some ideas to prepare for it, because it's harder if you're suddenly in the date and you haven't come up with any good plans for it. So, you know, so do you want to totally avoid it by going on vacation that day? Do you want to do a little ceremony that incorporates that person into it? Do you want to do something similar, but in a different location, so you're not getting hit by that grief wave as much, you know? So we give them that a month in advance. And then the day of, they get a video from us, either us or the funeral home can themselves record it, simply saying, we know Father's Day can be a really difficult day if you've lost your child, if you've lost your father or your grandfather, or if your father was not who you needed them to be. We understand that today is a difficult day, and we are, you know, here for you. So we're
sending message. Mm-hmm. It's a video message from the, I didn't know that.
Via email. So it'll come via email and it'll be the video, and we'll have a standardized wording. We ourselves can record it.
Okay.
Or the funeral home can have their staff record it. They've got to follow our guidelines, because this is not advertising. This is a show of support.
Exactly.
So that, again, you're showing up on those hard days.
Yeah. Wow. Sandra, I didn't even realize that. I mean, seriously, thank you. Again, this isn't everyone, funeral home, we're not selling you on this. Sandra, actually, I'm sorry, Sandra, you know, there's other competitors who do something similar, of course, not as cool as yours. But I want you to share, you know, that too, because again, we don't believe in any competition. Rising tides lift all boats, right?
Right.
So if there's anybody you recommend, we're going to go into the next section, but if you want to throw some names out there, you know, people can look at the options, but the bottom line is aftercare is important. Don't let people dangle out there suffering when there is a solution. Like, that's the thing. Your funeral home can become a solution no matter what you do. Don't just let it lie. Like, help. I mean, that's something that I actually have shivers, Sandra. I don't want to cry. The reason I've been in business a long time. I've been in business 37 years. I'm only 38. That's my story. Don't do the math. And I've only been in this space for the last 4 years with all death in my life. Like, I think, you know, I'm a believer. So I believe the Lord has prepared me to help this industry, because I believe it's sacred work. They are in the trenches with people in their lowest time of their life. So if you're a funeral home director, thank you for your service. Like, I think it's so important. But what we're talking about here is that Sandra realized that there is a gap, a care gap, that can be so easily filled and make your funeral stand out as the caring place that you want it to be. I mean, you wouldn't be in this industry if you didn't care, because this is not an easy life to be in this space, helping people at this low point. And because I've always done, like, I have military clients and restaurants and financial kind of, like, people talk to me like, why are you helping funeral homes? Like, they do that whole, seriously, Mary? And I'm like, because it's such an amazing place of people who have this heart. And you obviously are part of that, Sandra. So thank you for your service. So let's go into the good, bad, and the ugly, because I think this is really helpful for people in the funeral industry to kind of see what works, what doesn't, right? So the good is, what one grief support practice every funeral home should implement. That's a good thing. It's one thing they should do. Two, the bad, what is a well-meaning aftercare effort that kind of falls flat? And the ugly, what have you seen is the biggest mistake a funeral home can make after a service ends? So let's start with the good.
The good is any type of proactive grief help that you can give someone, anything that you keep showing up and you help them in those weeks and years that they need afterwards. So anything that you do that proactively helps people after loss is a great thing that you can do. You're feeling a desperate need in our society.
I love that. Okay. Bad. What's a well-meaning aftercare that fell flat?
I would say there are some out there where the aftercare that they give is a phone number that you can call. And it is aftercare, so hooray for that. But most people in grief have a really difficult time talking about it, especially when they have to make a specific phone call with a specific cry for help. It takes a lot to get you to that point. So even though it is something that is there, it really is helping only the few people who are going to take that step. Most people are not. They're just not comfortable with it.
Yeah, they don't want to ask for help, right? And especially men, that shows weakness. I don't want to ask
and
for help.
Teenagers, right? They don't want to call up and talk to a stranger about their feelings. Yeah.
No. Yeah. In our community, not only our funeral home, but also the local grief care center, Stephen Center, they have regular painting classes and other art related classes for children specifically, because they can work through their grief while they're doing something versus talking about it. So they'll have prompts and they'll paint things and they get very angry and they have to go through that. Like, you have to go through that if you've lost, you know, I can't imagine being 14 or 15 years old and losing a parent. Like, why, you know? Like, yeah. So now the ugly, what's the biggest mistake you've seen a funeral home make besides not being non-existent?
I mean, I get monthly emails from the funeral home and yearly postcards from the crematorium. They're junk mail. Like, it feels like I'm almost being spammed. I don't appreciate it. It actually is kind of a negative connotation because there's nothing helpful to me. I know it's an advertisement. They have my information because my husband died and they're sending me advertisements. And so it actually has a negative ramification for me. And most of the widows I talk to, none of us want just advertising. We don't need
interesting. Yeah. I mean, even if that's something at this point where talking to the funeral homes, if you have it, at least make it personal. Make it something that's not about selling pre-need. It's about what do you need right now? What can we provide you? And maybe we're having this event at our location. We're having a butterfly release. We're having a painting, whatever. We'd love for you to come and talk about your loved one. Yeah, because we're here for you. Like, so that could be something. So even if they're just doing that,
something,
just offer something that comes from a place of service, which I think, again, most people have a servant's heart in this industry, but they get so busy. They're so overwhelmed. They just have so much on their plate. Again, I think that's what both of us, you and I, want to relieve. Okay. So this is the next section, which is called the rapid fire. So I'm going to have you finish these sentences. Okay. Grief is
a swirl of emotions. It's not just sadness. It's anger. It's fear, anxiety, disorientation because life doesn't work the way you expect it to. But it is also physical symptoms. It's brain fog. It's exhaustion. It's numbness. So it is a whole mess of emotions and physical reactions.
Yeah. Ooh, I like that. I typically think when I think grief is that you wouldn't have grief if you didn't love someone so much. So I've heard the line, Grief is just love with nowhere to go.
That is one of my favorite ones. And actually, as part of that, what I ended up doing when I would hit the, because grief waves are natural. Grief waves are suddenly something reminds you, and it's like a physical force. One of the things I ended up doing because of that saying is grief wave breathing. I would breathe real in really deeply and think, what is the love that has no place to go? So I would find the love that was in that memory, hold on to it, and then I would physically breathe out the pain. And it's just psychological. But I found that I did it often enough that when I would feel a grief wave coming, I would go, oh, this is love coming, which is a different way to feel about it.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. That's really cool. Yeah, those breathing exercises are so good. Okay. Families need, again, briefly, families need.
Families need something that is approachable for everyone. Everyone's going to have some level of grief. They need something that's approachable that they can just use.
Okay. The future of aftercare is?
I hope the future of aftercare is true aftercare. It's truly incorporating not only the emotional stuff, but all of the paperwork stuff that happens as well, but really offering support in both of those areas.
I love it. The biggest opportunity funeral homes overlook is?
Is the building of the real relationships with the five people who are in grief and everyone that they know that's in grief. You could build all of those extending relationships.
I love that. Little the strings we talked about, keeping them tethered to you. And then lastly, what's one thing every funeral home should stop doing?
Stop sending out emails and flyers that offer no support. Stop sending out advertisements.
I love it. And here's the fast fix. If someone wanted to improve their aftercare this month, the next 30 days, what is the first thing that you would recommend to do?
I would recommend that they get an annual subscription with the Grief app. But if not with the Grief app, look at something like Help Text. And they send out text messages to people and their family. One of these things, they are both designed to be a set it and forget it. You know, you pay for the subscription, we handle everything else. And so that your staff don't have that extra duty, but you have those relationships.
I love that. Makes it easy. I had never heard of Help Text. That's really cool. Was there another one you had mentioned?
They actually started, she was a widow as well. She was a widow that had no grief support after her husband died. And so she started Help Text. It's all done via text. And I started the Grief app. So both of us have the same origin story, which tells you how big of a need there is out there for this.
Right, right. And not every widow has the time and the vision and the resources to create something like you did. So bravo to you, because that was a big investment for you to take on. So before we wrap up, there's one question I ask every guest of the Death Care Marketing Show. If you could leave every funeral home owner with one piece of wisdom, one lesson that you've learned that could help them better serve families, build trust, or grow their business, what would it be?
You know the person died. You are the one person that knows for sure that their person died. And they know that you know their person died because they paid you to handle the body. So if you fall down and don't provide help, they know that you were there, that you might have been able to, and that you didn't, because you are the person that knows that their person died.
Right. So it's a mantle to carry. Again, one more thing these funerals, owners have to feel like literally there's so much responsibility. I love that. Thank you for sharing not only your expertise, but your heart with our audience. And I think in today's conversation, it reminds us of something really important. The funeral may be the end of one chapter, but it's rarely the end of families' need for care. And the funeral homes that will thrive in the future won't simply provide beautiful services. They'll become the trusted partners through the grief journey. And maybe, and that's what marketing has always been, it's showing people you care long after the transaction is over. Any last words before we wrap up, Sandra?
I don't think so. I think you did a lovely summary of that.
Oh, thank you. Well, you are my inspiration. So listen, if you're a funeral home and you're watching this, if this helps, share with another funeral home that might need it. Let's do what works, drop what doesn't, and we'll see you next time on the Death Care Marketing Show. Have a great day, everybody.